You're locked into Leveling the Field, a women's sports podcast run by women for women. I'm your host, Tamia Kay, bringing you the game the women's sports way. And today, I am by myself, but it's okay, because we have a lot of basketball to discuss, two major Final Four recaps, and I'm ready to get into some basketball. So let's go ahead. Yesterday, our content team went out to the yard asking students who do they see winning in the Final Four matchup and who do they want to come out on top winning the Natty. Many students chose UConn or South Carolina to win the national championship, while others chose Texas to defeat UCLA. And even though most students chose Texas to defeat UCLA, nobody chose any other team to win the national championship outside of UConn and South Carolina. At 7 p.m. last night, South Carolina and UConn went head-to-head. And in results, South Carolina delivered a statement win in the Final Four, taking down UConn 62-48 behind physical defense, depth, and timely scoring. The Gamecocks controlled the pace early, making key adjustments with bigger lineups and never let UConn stars get comfortable. Ozzie Flood and Sarah Strong struggled to find rhythm, while South Carolina got major contributions from Taniya Latson and freshman Agot Maker off of the bench. Even when UConn made a late push, South Carolina responded and closed strong in the fourth quarter. Now the focus shifts to what this dominant performance means as South Carolina prepares for the national championship. Before we get into the basketball analytics, I just want to share a little bit about how I felt as a fan watching. To me, it looked like UConn was outcoached, and it also looked like all of the hope was taken out of the hearts of the stars. Sarah Strong and Ozzie Flood did not play up to their potential, nor did they play like a team who went undefeated all regular season. South Carolina, on the other hand, came out on a mission. They started off a little slow in the beginning of the first quarter, and Raven Johnson got in a little bit of foul trouble, but they adjusted, they bunkered down, and they stayed the course. This game was not only won by South Carolina's defensive dominance, but it was lost by UConn's offensive collapse. And this is where I have to give Coach Dawn Staley her flowers. If we know anything about Dawn, we know that she keeps receipts and we know that she studies film. So she's been preparing her team for a whole year for this moment in particular. And she's recruited strategically in order to put pieces in areas where she lacked the last time that they played. The funny thing about Agot Maker is she was a top 10 recruit who was sought out by UConn and thought about going there, but instead she chose to go to South Carolina and study under Dawn Staley. And the irony of all of this is that she was the second leading scorer last night for the Gamecocks. When Coach Staley decided to put Raven Johnson on Sarah Strong, that's when UConn started struggling offensively. And yes, role players contributed, but you have Ozzie Flood on your team. And for her to be projected as the number one or number two WNBA draft pick for the 2026 season, I was highly disappointed in her game last night. Flood had 8 points and 5 assists. She went 3-for-15 and 2-for-9 at the three-point range. And I understand that basketball is equally a mental game as well as a physical game, but when you're in moments like this, at the highest level playing one of the biggest games of your career, you have to show up. And this isn't something that has newly developed. She's been playing pretty mediocre the entire tournament series. And I don't tolerate any UConn slander at all, let alone any Ozzie Flood slander. But as somebody who enjoys good basketball, my question is, how is her draft stock being hurt by her performance over March Madness? Because for the majority of their season, they have played okay teams. But like it was stated before, they have not played South Carolina during the regular season. And South Carolina is the best basketball team in the country right now, considering they just defeated UConn. And this can lead into a whole nother segment that I can go on for ages about mental health awareness in athletes and making sure that they are ready mentally to be on the floor and on the court and diving deeper into the lives of an athlete outside of basketball, because we don't know what players are going through in their own personal lives. We only know what the media is showing us. We only know what we can see from our own standpoint as fans watching them play. But basketball is not just basketball. This is a person that's behind that as well. So I just hope that whatever Ozzie is going through, if she was going through anything, that she was able to overcome that and somebody has actually looked in and checked on her well-being, especially with Gino just walking off of the court at the end of the game and not pulling her out and having that special senior moment with her. And we'll get into that topic in a minute because I have a lot to say about that whole interaction. But I want to talk a little bit about the tall guard system and rotations. I'm not entirely sure if it was Dawn Staley's plan to go ahead and play a lot of tall guards, but once Raven Johnson got into foul trouble, she had to sub in Maddie McDaniel, and I believe she did an excellent job just controlling the pace of the floor and keeping everyone settled and just running South Carolina's offense. And I think the most beautiful part about having McDaniel out there as a second string point guard in a high energized Final Four matchup game was having Taniya Latson at her side, a player who just transferred from Florida State last year as a point guard and came in to South Carolina with an open mind to fill a new role, whatever that needed to be in order to get the Gamecocks to that next level. Taniya Latson is not new to scoring. She has won the scoring title for the NCAA of the 2024-2025 school term, and she showed up that night outscoring the entire team while also being a leader on the court and just showing her dominance in scoring and defending and rebounding. By the end of the night, the Gamecocks had four ladies in double digits. Joyce Edwards put on a show. She locked down Sarah Strong and was also getting huge buckets to fuel the momentum for the Gamecocks. Taniya Latson, leading scorer. Tessa Johnson, who has become a big bucket getter for the Gamecocks. You leave her open on the three-point line, she's going to definitely make you pay for it. And then, of course, the freshman Agot Maker coming in with 14 points as the second leading scorer. I don't think UConn failed to make necessary in-game adjustments. I think there were no adjustments to be made. At halftime, they interviewed Gino Auriemma, and they were asking about the first half of the game, and he didn't have any answers. Instead, he wanted to push blame on the referees. He wanted to push blame on Coach Staley as if it's her fault that his team is losing. But I don't feel like they had any adjustments that could be made other than give the ball to Sarah and give the ball to Ozzy and run the offense through them. But when your stars are not producing, what are you going to do? How are you going to fill in those roles? And that's why I'm not a huge fan of spot-up shooting and having just shooters sit in the corners, because when they cannot get the ball, or they do get the ball and they're expected to make a play and they cannot, then what? You've made them one-dimensional. And you see that even in other leagues, such as the NBA. The Lakers struggled really bad with that. For one period in time, they were trying to create an offense that was around LeBron. And it's no LeBron shade, but we know that LeBron needs spot-up shooters in order for his offense to run the way that he wants it to. So you have players who come in as role players or players who come in as playmakers, and now you're trying to reshape their entire game into being a corner shooter or a spot-up shooter. And once you break down their skill set and you program in their mind that they're supposed to catch and shoot or they're only a three-point shooting player, then they are not able to support you in areas that you need them to support you in if your star is not producing on the court. And unfortunately, I feel like that might be UConn's issue. Maybe they need to go back to the drawing board and find different ways to get their players involved. But for as long as I can remember, UConn has always had one or two stars and the other supporting cast were just shot makers. They're always going to have that dominant post player such as Sarah Strong, Aaliyah Boston, Breonna Stewart, all the way back to Tina Charles. And they're always going to have that combo guard such as Maya Moore and the many others that followed after her. But I think with this new stage of basketball, we might need to revisit the drawing board, Gino. You might have to come up with something a little bit better than what you have been producing. And that's okay. That's what happens when you have a new rising powerhouse. And nobody is exempt from a butt whipping. My coach used to always tell me, any team can beat any team on any given night. You just have to want it. And last night, South Carolina wanted it more than UConn. So with that being said, next season, everybody won't be looking at UConn as a team to beat. They're going to be looking at South Carolina or UCLA, whoever wins the championship tomorrow, as the team to beat. So you know what that means? They're going to start building their teams around what kind of program and what kind of team can defeat one of those two teams. And that's what it's going to be. And it's okay. You're going to have to put your pride to the side, Gino. And you're going to actually have to look at your team and make adjustments in order to beat the national champion. And speaking of pride, I told y'all we were going to revisit the Gino Auriemma crash out at the end of the game. What was that all about? Did he cross a line? And did it take away from what should have been a defining moment for Dawn Staley in South Carolina? Absolutely. That was the biggest secondhand embarrassment I have ever caught in my life. and I wasn't even at the game. I think it was embarrassing on a number of occasions. It was embarrassing for one, for his players, especially the seniors, because he did not share the last couple of seconds on the court with them. Instead, he decided to act as a toddler and run to the back and cry and complain about things that don't really matter. He should have pulled his seniors towards the end of the game to share a special moment with them, considering it is their last game playing on a collegiate level. I think that was very disrespectful, not only to the players, but also to the program that has been held at the highest esteem. Those ladies worked hard to get to where they were that night and play that game, and then to be left high and dry by the person that they look up to the most, that's tough. I think it was embarrassing and disrespectful to Coach Staley, considering her and Gino have a long history of working together. Dawn served as an assistant coach under Gino for Team USA at the 2014 FIBA World Cup and the 2016 Summer Olympics, helping win gold medals in both tournaments. They are two of the most influential coaches in women's basketball, and they have a history of professional collaboration. So for him to disrespect her at the highest level and on national television is highly unacceptable. I've been seeing this altercation all over the internet over the last 24 hours, and it just reminded me of all of the times that Gino's team has won in the past over Coach Staley's, and he was completely fine with that as long as they were winning. But the moment that they lost, he lost it. And to be a coach and to be a mentor and a role model with all of the kids that want to go to UConn in the future, with all of the kids who currently go to UConn, he put a stain on his name with the way that he behaved in that game. You have to have integrity. You have to have poise. You have to be the best version of yourself every day because you have so many people that are looking up to you. And it reminds me of a quote: how a man plays the game shows something of his character, but how he loses shows it all. Gino, you showed it all last night. And I'm glad that you apologized. I'm glad that you issued out what you needed to do. I'm pretty sure your PR coach really got on you and said, we gotta clean this up because you too big of a figurehead and we could lose millions. But it shouldn't have took all that. As a grown man, as a man who has experienced handing out losses, you should be willing to take one. You should be willing to sympathize with those who lose and be able to lose with dignity and poise. And for those of you who haven't heard his apology, he issued it approximately 2 hours ago. End quote. There's no excuse for how I handled the end of the game versus South Carolina. It's unlike what I do and what our standard is here at Connecticut. I want to apologize to the staff and the team at South Carolina. It was uncalled for and how I reacted. The story should be how well South Carolina played, and I don't want my actions to detract from that. I've had a great relationship with their staff, and I sincerely want to apologize to them. Y'all, if that is not PR coded, listen, I know it's PR coded because I'm a PR student myself. So for me, I just feel like the PR team really didn't make it emotional at all. Like, I don't know. I feel like I could have wrote a better speech. I would have started off with, I first want to apologize to Coach Dawn Staley for one, because you got this lady all up out of her character. She's already a black woman, and the media looks for any reason to make a black woman look like a mad, crazy black woman. All the posts that I've seen is of snippets of him walking off and her yelling to the top of her lungs. Like, come on, y'all. Y'all know that he initiated that conversation first. And then, you know, as the black community, we got to make a joke out of anything. So they got the audio of her saying she gonna beat his butt and somebody in the background saying, oh, it's the dementia. Like, come on, y'all. Y'all are really taking away from the game of basketball. The media has been eating this up and just posting snippets and different angles and pictures and trash talk from the post-game conference of just the back and forth between the two coaches. But we're not acknowledging the fact that South Carolina just beat the only undefeated team of the season. We ought to give those girls their flowers, what they're owed, what they're due. But instead, the media and everybody else on social media are so enticed with controversy. That's all social media wants to hear. It's just controversy, controversy, controversy. No, this is basketball. This is not the drama that we signed up for. If you want drama, you need to go watch an episode of Baddies or something. I don't know, but this ain't it. This is basketball. But at the end of the day, I guess he apologized, so we'll accept the apology, but go seek anger management help you need to go take a class on how to lose with grace or something, Gino. But I don't want to hear any more from you until the start of the 2026-2027 basketball season. But on a lighter subject, do head-to-head wins matter more than championships when deciding between Gino and Dawn Staley? Or is this officially Dawn's era now? I feel like that could be a very controversial question. I will say that Gino has way more championships than Dawn. We know that. But I believe that the era of basketball and the style of basketball that he's trying to get his team to play has transformed now. And I believe that Dawn and other coaches like Duke and UCLA and Texas, they play a flashier, more team-centered basketball. I do believe that his coaching style, when it comes down to defense, is still elite. And if it's not broke, you don't have to fix it. But when it comes down to offense, I think that he can learn and he can grow from this loss. And that's what I'm gonna leave it at. I think that Dawn is on her way up. And I do believe that she is a likable coach. I do believe that she will get the recruits that she wants just because she's so relatable and so personal. But I won't claim her as the best coach of all time as of yet, just because there are coaches that came before her. There are coaches that are still currently coaching who have the accolades to back up the game. And I'm gonna leave it at that. But I will be honest, she is definitely on her way. Heading into the championship game against UCLA tomorrow at 3 o'clock, I believe the matchup and factor that will ultimately decide if South Carolina finishes the job will come down to the matchup between Joyce Edwards and Lauren Betts. If you've been keeping up with women's basketball and March Madness, you will realize that UCLA relies heavily on Lauren Betts, and their offense is primarily ran through her and Kiki Rice. As strong of an offensive player Joyce Edwards is, I feel like 6'7 is hard to guard. So it will be interesting to see what type of defensive stops Joyce Edwards can create and what Dawn Staley has up her sleeve when it comes down to defense. Because sticking Raven Johnson on Betts is not going to work how it did when she was on Sarah Strong. But on the other end, South Carolina has a dynamic guard play between Raven Johnson and Taniya Latson. And then also, Maker is making a name for herself as well. So it'll be interesting to see how UCLA plans to stop the heavily equipped guards of South Carolina. And it'll also come down to seeing if UCLA can make their shots. I'm a big fan of Jaime Jaquez's younger sister, and I believe that she is going to be a dynamic guard. And I like the way that her and Kiki Rice play together. But like I said, it will come down to who can make shots. And it's also going to come down to game style. UCLA plays a much slower basketball than South Carolina does. South Carolina is very big on getting out in fast break transitions and scoring off of that. So we're going to see if UCLA will be able to stop some of those fast break runs. And also, we will watch and see if South Carolina can stop Lauren Betts in the interior. And speaking of Lauren Betts and UCLA, let's flip it to the other side of the bracket, where Texas and UCLA squared up last night at 9 o'clock for the Final Four matchup. And this was an actually competitive matchup, but UCLA controlled what mattered the most, the boards and defensive pressure. They dominated inside and made life extremely difficult for Madison Booker, holding her to an inefficient night and never letting her get comfortable. Texas had their moments, but UCLA's physicality and control of second chance opportunities ultimately made the difference down the stretch. So let's get into it. Was this game ultimately decided by UCLA's dominance on the boards or Texas' inability to generate efficient offense? From what I saw, it looked like a little bit of both. I believe that, just like I stated before, basketball is a physical and a mental game. When your team cannot get rebounds and second chance points, it takes a toll on the mental stability of that team, especially when it's a high stakes game. And I feel like because UCLA controlled the boards from the gate, it became a very sloppy and choppy game for Texas. What I will give Texas credit for is that their center did not back down to Lauren Betts. Now, I know what you're thinking. Kyla Odekrey is 6'6 and Lauren Betts is 6'7. So she's supposed to battle her down there. She's supposed to give her a run for her money. But if you think about it, this young lady had 11 points and 7 rebounds compared to Betts' 16 points and 11 rebounds. And I feel like that might be the reason why Texas wasn't able to generate a natural offense, because it was the battle of the bigs the whole night. It looks like all the stars were struggling on both sides of the brackets, because last night Madison Booker was held to a soft 6 points with 7 rebounds, and Rory Harmon only had 8 and 5. Had Kyla Odekrey not dropped those 11 points, they would have lost by 18 points. I want to discuss Madison Booker for a second because she wasn't limited to a small 6 points for no reason. She went 3 for 23 because she had some of the biggest players on her. And I think that was a strategic UCLA defensive game plan move. And Texas relies too heavily on her to carry the offense. Now let's sit right there just for a moment, because a lot of teams came into March Madness with decent squads, but we knew exactly who their star player was. Now there's a difference in having a star player, and there's a difference in using your star player as a crutch who pretty much carries you throughout the remainder of the season. We've seen it with Texas, we saw it with TCU, we saw it with Vanderbilt. And the only other team that we might have saw it a little bit in was Notre Dame. And all of these teams were knocked out in the Elite Eight. Now we get to the Final Four, and the only teams that are left are well-balanced teams. Now, one could make a case and say that UConn is a well-balanced oil machine, but in my opinion, from last night's game, it proves exactly the opposite. Sarah Strong and Ozzie Fudd were not able to produce, which led in UConn's defeat. Now, what I can say is UConn has a very strong defense that allows those players to execute in the ways that they execute because they are able to stop the other team from scoring. But if you take a team who has an okay defense, such as Texas, but a strong offensive player, and you find a way to stop her, and you're able to knock down your shots, you're going to win every time. And that's exactly what UCLA did to Texas last night. Now, I already shared with you that Lauren Betts had her name written all over the game, but not only did she have 16 points and 11 rebounds, but she also had 3 strong blocks throughout the game. And her defense is going to be that game-changing defense when it comes down to playing South Carolina in the championship. But I also feel that Dawn Staley is a better coach than UCLA's coach, and I'm interested in seeing how she has prepared her team for this. In my opinion, if I had to guess, I think she's going to go with a lot of fast break guards. She's going to try to get out and transition very quickly because she knows that she has a faster team. And with Joyce Edwards, I anticipate her making a lot of short corner and free throw shots, trying to get out, get the ball a lot faster than Lauren Betts can get out there to defend her. One quick move straight to the basket, or one quick move, step back, jump shot. This game is also going to come down to mental toughness. Because UCLA is so powerful with dominating the boards, it's going to be critical for South Carolina to bunker down and adjust their mental state when they are not getting their second chance points and they're not getting those offensive rebounds. I feel like that's what really deteriorated Texas' momentum and confidence. And honestly, last night showed me the difference between a good coach and an elite coach. Because at what point should have Texas adjusted away from Booker and looked for other scoring opinions? And at that point, who should have stepped up? I feel like Rory did what she was supposed to do as a point guard. She didn't have the best scoring night, but she did drop 8 points, 5 rebounds, and 5 assists, which is decent for an okay guard. Games like these are when coaches have to really dig into their bag and look and see what they have. If you know you don't have the best type of scoring team, then you have to have the best plays. You have to have the best defense. This is when coaching comes into play heavily. And I feel like this game was winnable, definitely, for Texas. It went all the way down to the wire. And if Madison Booker would not have gotten blocked within that last play, who knows? Maybe they could have won. I don't think so. Not with the way I saw her coming from half court. I was like, there's no way she's about to try to make that layup, that reverse layup on the left side where she sees 2 big men down low. But she tried it. And you know what? I'm not mad at it, because when you are the go-to player, you got to do what it takes in order to get your team to the promised land. Unfortunately, they just fell short. UCLA's guards, Rice, Jaquez, and Knopkins gave steady production, while Texas's backcourt was inconsistent. How important was guard play in a game this physical? Like I stated before, you can have the best defense in the world, but if your guards and your players are not scoring and producing the points that it takes to win the game, then it's all for naught. I hate that I keep referring back to the UConn and South Carolina game, but that's a prime example. I feel like both teams were playing extremely hard defense, and UConn eventually fell apart because it got to a point where it was like, all right, we're playing all of this defense, but nobody's scoring, so we're exhausting all of this energy on defense, and now we can't knock down shots. We were already cold, but now we're cold and tired. And that messes with a team's confidence. It messes with their mental state in a game. And then eventually it affects the entire game, and before you know it, you're getting blown out. So big props to the guards of UCLA. We will see if they'll be able to transition and take this over to the championship game on tomorrow. I feel like UCLA has potential to make this a very good game, but it will come down to their rebounding ability and knocking down shots. If there's a will, there's a way. But if Dawn Staley has anything to say, it's not happening on Easter Sunday. So with that being said, I do have the South Carolina Gamecocks coming out as the 2025-2026 National Champions of the Year. But I do think that UCLA is going to make it a very good game, and I'm hoping it's a very good game because I plan on watching it. If I had to guess, I think it's going to be a very high-scoring game for South Carolina, and I think UCLA is going to fight up until probably the start of the fourth quarter, and I think that they are going to fall apart. If I had to guess the end score, I would say something around 66-50 South Carolina way. Well, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Leveling the Field. Before I get out of here, I just want to give a couple of shout outs. Shout out to God, shout out to my mom and dad, shout out to my family and friends who continue to support and listen to this podcast daily. Shout out to my co-host and team who unfortunately were not able to be here today. I held it down for you guys, and I did get South Carolina their credit that was due, even though I was rooting for UConn. We'll talk more about that next week. I'm pretty sure they're going to grill me, you guys. But I also just want to give a shout out to 90.5 for it being their 50th year anniversary this year. We just finished up 90.5 weeks, so shout out to them. And I just want everybody to be safe on the road. If you're traveling for Easter Sunday, just be safe, you know? And we look forward to talking to y'all more next week. Again, thank y'all for rocking with us here on WANM 90.5. I'm your producer and host, Amia K, always bringing you the game the women's sports way, and we will catch y'all next week. Leveling the Field is produced in the studio of WANM FM 90.5 in the School of Journalism and Graphic Communications at Florida A&M University.